The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. So much to get to on today's program. We have a little bit of a follow-up on the interview there with Tony Bobulinski on Tucker Carlson's show Tuesday night. His ratings following that show just through the roof. So the message, despite all the efforts of the mainstream media to smother this story, the message certainly is getting out. At least it's getting out to half of the country. We'll update you on some of those facts and figures a little bit later on in the show. But first, Europe is heading right back into lockdown. Lockdown 2.0. Emmanuel Macron announced just yesterday that France will again be retreating into a national shutdown beginning tomorrow, and it will continue at least until December 1st. So that's 4.5 weeks, another month at least. It could be longer. Maybe it could take us right through the winter. A nationwide lockdown beginning tomorrow for France. So here is round two. Germany is following suit. I don't think it'll be quite as strict as it will be in France. But even Germany exercised some restraint going back to March and April. Germany's going along. Italy's probably going to be following next. I told you a little bit about the UK crackdown yesterday. And we're waiting, of course, to see if the UK is going to go into full lockdown mode. Now, keep in mind, just go back and view some of those shows that we put together in March and April when we talked about what happens when, as a people, you surrender your freedoms. And look at how easy it is for another round. And think about all that we've learned these past 6 months about the mortality rate, about the most vulnerable, about the fact, as I've covered even this week, how that children, they're not the carriers that we thought they once were, and they're certainly not in danger. The flu is more dangerous for children than is COVID-19. And so instead of coming back, okay, so there's a second wave of infections. Instead of coming back and saying, all right, we've learned from round one, let's isolate the vulnerable. Let's look after the elderly centers in particular. Let's really be careful with those who have comorbidities. And yet it's nothing like that, is it? It's just another round of a complete and total lockdown. And round two of a total lockdown proves what about round one? It didn't work. It did not work. And round two proves what about the summer-long mandates to wear a mask wherever you go? It didn't work. And so here we are again. The same old, nothing new. Just it's like we're right back to March 15th. Stock markets, understandably, they're cratering. They know what this means. Here we're now bracing ourselves for another round of recession, perhaps a depression. Now, the significance, if we just step back for a moment, you think about it. If this sweeps across the landscape in Europe, I'll get to the United States here in just a second. But if this happens right across the continent, How is this going to impact all of those prophecies we know about the 10 nations, about Germany taking the lead? This is Ambrose Evans Pritchard. He wrote, I suspect that lockdown 2 and a double dip recession in the Latin bloc will bring matters to a head next year, he says. Germany and the Northern bloc will have to decide whether to go all in and agree this time to rebuild Europe on foundations that are genuinely Hamiltonian, or stand back and let an economic and political reckoning run its course. In other words, this is Ambrose Evans Pritchard saying that this could bring about Europe's transformational moment. And we know that a transformation is coming. Revelation 17 and verse 10. And furthermore, you look at what Herbert Armstrong said decades ago about how that an economic crisis, that's the catalyst to bring the 10 kings together. That's the catalyst needed for 10 nations to rally around Germany for the seventh and final formation of the Holy Roman Empire. Prophesied in your Bible. What a year this has been. And what will it be like in 2021? Lockdown number two, at least through December 1st, at least into December now. We're almost into 2021. And you still have COVID-19 dominating the news, dominating domestic policy for major nations, for economic powerhouses. Lockdown 2.0. There's another article here, and the reason I think that this stands out is it's by Peter Beyer. He's the coordinator for transatlantic cooperation of the federal government at the German Foreign Office. He's a CDU member of parliament, and he's calling for Germany to step it up, to flex its muscle, and he's giving some specifics on how that Germany might do this. Next year, well, we'll have plenty to talk about next year as well. That's a pretty safe forecast, I think, for this program. It says here, Germany's foreign policy stature does not reflect its political and economic importance. Our country must finally dare to take on more leadership and responsibility to lead in the international community. This is what our international partners expect of us. This is what the nations around us want. They want Germany to take the lead. They want Germany to take charge. It says here, Germany, it's time for Germany to rise to this challenge. On the one hand, offering leadership means being true to principles. On the other hand, it means taking concrete action. We've got to start taking some action. We've got to get more involved in Libya. He even mentions with respect to Iran. You've seen a lot of newspaper articles from commentators talking about this, urging Germany to take the lead. It's not often that you see it coming, though, from the German leaders themselves. It says here, with our partners does not mean that we can wait for others to move forward and do the job. On the contrary, from Washington to Tallinn, people are waiting for Germany to stop using empty words and to provide concrete support for countering Russia's aggression and China's quest for power. And so he's calling on Germany to have sort of a new National Security Council. He's calling for Germany. He's calling for Europe to rally around Germany. He said this, we must be ready by the next federal elections at the latest. Those who do not concern themselves with the world will be surprised by it more quickly than they would like. And we're certainly living in a world that is just, it's like there's one earth-shaking event after another. Who could have imagined back in March, April of this year, that we'd now be to lockdown 2.0. And speaking of the statistics that we now have respecting the disease, we also have quite a few statistics that have come in about The Cure, Lockdown 1.0, all of the adverse effects that that had on our societies, we're starting to see how many people suffered and even died because of Lockdown 1.0. There was Sam sent me a tweet this morning. It was from an ambulance service in London. 37 calls per day for a suicide. Either people who've committed suicide, obviously calls from others, relatives and such, or that have committed or tried to commit suicide. And this is up from, I think it was 22 or 23 last year, and it was down in the teens just 5 years ago. Today, 37. Every single day down in London. Those are some pretty sobering statistics. What's causing that? What's driving that? What's generating that? Well, we've covered some other developments. And what did we say back in March and April? The cure is worse than the disease. And now we're going for a cure, another cure, quote unquote, that's just a blanket lockdown on everyone. Have we not learned one thing from even the history of the past 6 or 7 months? What does this say about our leaders? What does this say about our ability to learn from history? Even the most recent history, a pandemic wave, another wave of it, another wave of lockdowns, and together with it, the looming economic crisis that will soon follow. Now, that's the backdrop of this historic U.S. presidential election. And what a stark difference you have between both sides. You have Joe Biden, who, when he ever does get out of the basement, he's always masking it up. And then you have President Trump, who says, look, we've got to get on with our lives. I can't stay in the basement. I've got a job to do. I've got to go forward. I've got to work. And of course, there's a lot of Americans that think the same way. So you have these two. And of course, what does Joe Biden keep saying over and again? I am going to listen to the science. President Trump won't do this, but I will listen to the scientists. He's anti-science, not me. Not me. We're talking about mask mandates, and we're talking about another lockdown. Listen to what Anthony Fauci had to say. This is Shepard Smith talking about just how wonderful the lockdown was in Melbourne for 111 days. And he's praising Dr. Fauci, who has praised the way they've handled the pandemic in Australia. Clip one.
And you were talking about what an extraordinary thing has happened in Melbourne. They had a 111-day lockdown, started with 20,000 cases a day, and as you pointed out, 2 days ago they had zero cases. Why can't we do that?
Yeah, when you talk about lockdowns, that certainly they were extremely successful.
They were extremely successful, he says. And then you have Shep Smith saying there, why can't we do what Melbourne did? Why can't we lock down for 111 days? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because we need to make a living? 3 months? 4 months? How much money is Shep Smith making behind the desk? He's not wearing a mask, by the way. 111 days. Who could have thought of asking a question like that just a year ago? He's a commentator on TV asking the good doctor, Doc, can't we shut everything down except for news media, but can't we shut everything down for 4 months? Why can't we do what Melbourne did? That's just yesterday. And then Dr. Fauci, for his part, they were extremely successful. Well, with reducing cases or infections, but what about the damage associated with the lockdowns? Doesn't even enter the topic of conversation. It's just lockdown 2.0. This time, you would think, let's see, what have we learned from number one? We've learned about the disease, we've learned about the lockdown, we've learned about, in some cases, the cure was worse than nothing. It's as if we've learned zero. The ignorance on display, the willful blindness and delusion. It's just normal now. I guess this is the new normal. Why can't we shut everything down for 111 days? So coming in, and it just so happens that we're a few days away from perhaps the most historic election in the United States of America, in history. And through it all, where have the people even had much of a voice in the Western nations? They've just had to go along, right? Like the sheep. And yet now you have an opportunity for the average, ordinary citizens of at least one nation, happens to be the superpower of the world, and they have an opportunity to tell the elites what they think about shutting everything down for 111 days? It's going to be an interesting week next week. You know, and you have to wonder, Sam and I were talking yesterday about how and when the mask mandates kicked into gear. And if you go back to what the experts were saying in January and February and March, what were they saying? This is from Chris Whitty. He's the chief medical officer here in the UK. He said, in terms of wearing a mask, our advice is clear that wearing a mask, if you don't have an infection, reduces the risk almost not at all. So we do not advise that. That's from March 4th, before the world went hysterical. We don't advise that at all. Here's Jenny Harries. She's the deputy chief medical officer. For the average member of the public walking down a street, it's not a good idea. And then she talked about behavioral issues like touching your face, you know, adjusting the mask and so on. She says, because of these behavioral issues, people can adversely put themselves at more risk than less. Okay, these are the experts. I mean, the top experts. I'll get to Fauci in just a second. Alex Azar, the U.S. Health Secretary, just you and me wearing these masks, he said. Is that a he or she? I can't remember. He. Okay, there you go. That could actually sometimes be more harmful to you than not wearing a mask, because if it's not fitted right, you're going to fumble with it. You're going to be touching your face. Have you ever seen anyone do this? I just see it, I think, maybe all the time. All the time. Every single interview. I don't know if I've seen one interview with someone wearing a mask who didn't reach up and adjust it and touch it and get right near his nose and his eyes and his face and his mouth. Oh, yes. It says, because if it's not fitted right, you're going to fumble with it. You're going to be touching your face, which is the number one way you're going to get diseases. Did you hear this? Alex Azar. That was when? February 26th. Here's March 5th. U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams. We'll make a montage of these later because I'm sure we'll need it again when we get into lockdown 2.0. He says, you're going to be more likely to touch your face, and you can actually increase your risk of getting respiratory disease like coronavirus or flu. That was the U.S. Surgeon General back on March 5th. And then, of course, you have Dr. Fauci himself, who said on March 8th that, you know, it might make people feel a little bit better. It might even block a droplet. But it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is. So that makes us wonder, here at the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, did the mask wearing, did that cause the spread, the second wave or the third wave, whatever wave that we're in? We went into lockdown 1.0. That didn't solve the problem, obviously, unless you go back to what they said they were putting in place in the first place for, to flatten the curve. It did flatten the curve, or at least the curve flattened, whether it was lockdown or not. But then it was the mask wearing. It had to be everywhere. You, except for a World Series victory, if you're flying, if you're doing anything, you've got to strap on that mask. And so you wonder, how did that actually make it worse? Did that actually cause it to spread more? Well, we don't have all the answers to those questions, but if you go back to what the experts were saying in February and March, you wonder. You just have to wonder. But what about the contrast between the two presidential candidates heading into next Tuesday? I mentioned, as I say, the Biden camp, and then you listen to President Trump, and he's saying this every day. And of course, there's multiple rallies per day now. Listen to what he said yesterday in Arizona, clip two.
If you vote for Biden, it means no kids in school, no graduations, no weddings, no Thanksgiving, no Christmas, and no 4th of July together. Other than that, you have a wonderful life. Can't see anybody, but that's all right. You have a wonderful life.
That's the president yesterday in Arizona. Can't see anybody, but you can go on and have a wonderful life. His campaign strategy, his platform is that, all right, and I've even had it myself, but I've got to go forward. We've got to get back to work. He's talking about the jobs and economy numbers that are going to be coming out right at the end of this month. That too comes right before the election. Lots of things happening right here on the stretch run, including lockdown 2.0 just a few days before the election. You go back to the last debate, and Joe Biden says, yeah, we just want to do away with the oil and gas industry. That's just a couple weeks before the election. When so much is riding on Pennsylvania. Some interesting things happening right here in these last couple of weeks. This World Series game, by the way, I didn't get into it as much yesterday. But just looking at it after the fact, the Los Angeles Dodgers, they win the World Series, I guess that was Tuesday night. And yet you have this bizarre scene at the end of the game, toward the end of the game, the third baseman, Justin Turner, he took a coronavirus test before the game, and the test came back initially as inconclusive, and then I guess it was around about the middle of the game when they found out he tested positive. He's the guy in the red, right? The one hugging everyone. There he is. And look at, let's see if he adjusts his mask as you look at this footage. I bet you will before it's all said and done. In any event, he's tested positive. He's taken out of the game in the seventh inning and told to self-isolate. So he went and self-isolated for two innings. For two innings. Then the team wins the World Series. I mean, can you believe this? You could not write a story like this. Crazier than this. Now he's with the team. They're taking group photos, and he takes the mask off. Well, they've won the World Series. This is not someone who's wearing a mask in case there might be COVID around. He has COVID. He has the disease, all right? And he's posing with the trophy, touching the trophy, touching his face mask, kissing his girlfriend, moving through the clubhouse, posing for photos. How many athletes, by the way, we've heard of quite a few athletes that get COVID-19. Have any of them died? Has there been one fatality? Have you heard of one? Well, that's a separate story, I suppose. Here's ESPN from October 28th. The veteran infielder was not immediately with his teammates as they celebrated the franchise's first World Series since 1988. That made me feel pretty old when I heard that. You know, going into the sixth game, they kept saying, yeah, the Dodgers have had this long drought of World Series victories. And I kept thinking, no, I remember when I was off at AC, Oral Hershiser, remember him? Remember, who was the other guy? Kurt Gibson, greatest scene ever. The home run where he could hardly walk. He was running around the bases like I run. And he won the game for him. I forget which game that it was. In any event, now, I mean, I've heard all week, that was 30-some years ago. So here they are. They win the World Series. It says, but the 35-year-old did, let me just back up. The veteran infielder was not immediately with his teammates as they celebrated the franchise's first World Series since 1988. But the 35-year-old did return to the field with his wife about an hour after the game and took photos with the World Series trophy. He got a hug from longtime teammate Clayton Kershaw and sat front and center next to manager Dave Roberts for a team photo, occasionally lowering a mask he otherwise wore throughout the celebration. So the mask came off a little bit, and then he'd put it on. Then it would come off. Then the picture, I mean, he's got to take it completely off. What is... You talk about a hoax. The disease is certainly real, but are these people worried? And then when you ask the teammates about, yeah, he couldn't come for the celebration, they were more sad about that than they were about the fact that he got COVID-19. I mean, this is just unbelievable. We just have to play along, I guess. I was on one flight going back to the U.S. and had a flight attendant tell me three times, please put that mask a little bit higher. Put it right above your nose. Three times. I was sitting next to no one. I was at least 2 or 3 meters away from everyone on that plane because it was virtually empty. And here he is. He's not just doing this for safety's sake, wearing the mask and such. He has COVID. He has COVID. He was told to self-isolate just 2 or 3 hours beforehand. 2 or 3 innings, I should say. In any event, this he talks about the hugs, the photos. Says here, Mookie Betts, when asked about Turner returning to the field to join the Dodgers for a team picture, defended his teammate. He's part of the team, Betts said. Forget all that. He's part of the team. Forget all what? The COVID-19? Are we supposed to forget it now? And so if we're a part of a team, the Dodgers, of course, I mean, if it's your child's Little League team, that's got to be canceled. They can't even go to school. No funerals, no weddings, no religious gatherings, especially if you're Jewish, none of that. But this okay, forget it. He's part of the team. We're not excluding him from anything, not even if he has COVID-19. I added that little bit. So he's not to be excluded, even if he tests positive. You wonder where the CNN commentators are. I'll tell you where they are. They're there. They're still in the studio. They're criticizing Governor Noem because she's not shaming people into wearing face masks. But they say nothing about this man. Now, granted, knowing what we know about COVID, it's not much, in my eyes, it's not much of a risk either. But Given the double standards, given the commentary, given the direction that so many nations are going on right now, it really is an astonishing sight to see that. He's part of the team, so we're not going to exclude him. And then listen to this story. Remember, he was away for a little bit of the celebration, and then he came back for most of it, from what you can see on the video footage. He made a good bit of the celebrations, I do believe. But then listen to his teammates about the little sliver. Remember, he was in the self-isolation mode for what? What would have been? Maybe 45 minutes? And then he's out with the world again. Listen to this. It's gut-wrenching. This is the World Series MVP, Corey Seager. It hurts me. I can't imagine how he feels. If I could switch places with him right now, I would, because that man, more than anybody, deserves to take a picture with that trophy. So he's mourning that he couldn't make it for one of the photos, not that he got the disease. Unbelievable. It says here, because that man, more than anybody, deserves to take a picture with that trophy, celebrate with us, have his family around to enjoy this moment, and that got taken away from him. And that's not right. That doesn't sit well with me. Doesn't sit well with me that he missed one opportunity for a photo. This is what Clayton Kershaw said. I'm sure it's really hard tonight, and we all feel for him, but I hope he can take solace in the fact that we're not here without him. He's been our guy for a long time. He's been the rock in the postseason for us every single year. Wasn't it Governor Cuomo a while back that said, words to the effect that if you don't wear a mask, then you could be guilty of murder. Now, here's someone that tested positive for COVID-19, this disease that has now shut down the entirety of France, Germany, now Italy, maybe the UK, And if Joe Biden wins the election next week, probably the United States of America. And yet, he carries on with the celebration. He missed the first part of it, but I guess it was just too much for him to resist. And so he comes out and exposes himself to the world. He's infected. And he also exposes a lot of the lies and the deception that we've heard about this disease and who, in fact, is the most vulnerable. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
We talk often on this program about truth and lies. You think of quite a few scriptures, John 8 and verse 44, Satan being the father of lies. He's the one that is spreading the deception. He's behind the dishonesty or the cover-ups. Revelation 12:9, you're familiar with these verses, I know. But I was reading, this was an article Joel Hilliker put together a few years ago for Royal Vision. And he's going back through some of the scriptures in Exodus and Deuteronomy about witnesses, the responsibility of a witness, how to examine a witness, what to do with the false witness. And he makes the statement in this article that nothing perverts justice like lying. Nothing. Nothing perverts the justice system like lying. Last week I made the point how that if you don't confront this evil and then administer punishment, then that evil will persist. That evil will spread. It'll spread like leaven. It'll leaven the whole lump. I'm going to go through this article in greater detail and try to prepare a segment for you. Because when you look at the way God set up the justice system in ancient Israel, you really come to an understanding of what God thinks about dishonesty and lying and how destructive it is to not tell the truth. If you have a lot of people not telling the truth, it destroys nations. And that's what we see happening. Here you have all of these shocking revelations, and 95% in the media are trying to prevent the story from getting out there. They're trying to prevent the story from going forward. They're trying to cover it up. They had this hearing yesterday with all of the big tech moguls. And here they are testifying, these senators. So many of them are upset, at least the Republicans. Well, look at what you did with the New York Post. They still can't even get into their Twitter account. And so Jack Dorsey, he's the odd-looking founder of Twitter, and he's there trying to answer. He's trying to give an answer for what his company has done, shutting out conservative voices, not the progressive, certainly not. Certainly not shutting out or trying to blot out any unverified stories about Donald Trump. If it makes Donald Trump look bad, well, then you just run with it. But listen to Ted Cruz yesterday. This is clip 10. Listen to Ted Cruz questioning Dorsey about Twitter's influence on the upcoming U.S. election. Clip 10.
Mr. Dorsey, does Twitter have the ability to influence elections?
No.
So you're testifying to this committee right now that Twitter, when it silences people, when it censors people, when it blocks political speech, that has no impact on elections?
People have choice of other communication channels with which...
Not if they don't hear information. If you don't think you have the power to influence elections, why do you block anything?
Good question. It's a good question. If you're sitting there and you think, oh, we don't have any influence, then why did you block it? Why did you try to blot it out? Why do you not want this story to get out there? Well, I mean, it's misinformation. It's not verified. We've heard that from the media all week. Listen to Senator Cory Gardner also questioning Mr. Dorsey, clip 9.
So somebody denies the Holocaust has happened is not misinformation.
It's misleading information, but we don't have a policy against that type of misleading information.
Oh, we don't have a policy against that type of misinformation or misleading information. It's just against that which would make the opponent of Donald Trump look bad, or would make the opponent of Donald Trump answer for what he's done. That we do have policies about that kind of information. Holocaust denial, well, that's fine. I mean, if you want to say that, fine, fine. We're just a platform, right? We're just a platform. We're not saying it. That's the excuse they make when they allow just lies and filth to disseminate. No problem. And then you find out all of this evidence, this damning evidence, about someone who wants to run the country. And what a contrast, as I said, between the two candidates, President Trump and his opponent, Joe Biden. Tucker Carlson, as you know, he gave that lengthy interview, 45 minutes straight, virtually unedited. That happened on Tuesday night. And listen to, so you've sat there, I didn't see the whole interview, we played some of the clips yesterday, but supposing you saw it Tuesday night, you see the full-length interview, and then you have Tucker Carlson wrapping it up at the end of the night, and he's thanking his network for just allowing him to run this story. This is clip 8.
Here is a man the Biden family approached to run their business in China. He did what they asked them to do. He met with the former Vice President Joe Biden twice to discuss business in China. And when it emerged that this happened, they attacked him as an agent of Russia. I want to thank Fox News for allowing us to put this on the air. This information's been out a long time. We were under a lot of pressure not to air it, and they let us, and we're grateful.
Now, he works for Fox News. Fox is supposed to be the conservative network, right? But he says there that we were under a lot of pressure not to air this. What? From where? From insiders at Fox News? From some of the Fox News executives? I think it was President Trump yesterday who said that the network really has taken a turn for the worse after Roger Ailes. In any event, that's Tucker Carlson very humbly at the end of his show saying, thank you for letting us run this show. He's come under a tremendous amount of pressure not to sit down with Tony Bobulinski, not to sit down and interview Hunter Biden's business partner, the one who worked with Hunter Biden, the one who met with Joe Biden twice to discuss business, the one who had all of these email exchanges with Hunter Biden, with Joe Biden, with Jim Biden, all of them, the whole Biden family. Here he is thanking his network, his own network. He's got the highest rated show on the network. I mean, he's got some leverage because of that. But still, he's there thanking his own network. Just so that he could get the message out. Within that interview, by the way, listen to what Bobulinski said about the safety precautions he's taken with his family. Clip 7.
I'm doing this out of a patriotic duty to our country based on my military background and my grandfather's background. So other people can determine the facts and what matters and how they want to vote. But I had to go on record because they chose to sort of mar up my name. So I have a former SEAL team protecting my family. I'm not at home right now. And I'll travel the next 4 years if I have to. I had to do this.
Are you worried?
Of course I'm worried. I've gotten death threats.
Death threats? And then he's got a SEAL team protecting his family? And he's saying, look, I'll travel the next 4 years on the run if I have to get the truth out. You know, in this article that Joel Hilliker did a few years ago, where he talked about the responsibility of a witness, he says here, the judge has his part to play in meting out justice, but so do the witnesses. And God says, if you see a crime, you have a duty to come forward with the true account, with a true account of it. That is the law. And so you have to give this man some credit. He believes he's witnessed crime in the Biden family, and he's come forward. Now, it's motivated more, obviously. It's motivated more out of clearing his name. He doesn't want to be accused of being a Russian agent. But he's come forward, and he's stated the truth. And look at what he has to do just to try to safeguard his family. A SEAL team. That's how badly people out there want to destroy this message. That's how badly they want to prevent this message from going out. What did the Biden business associate say? Look, Tony, if you come forward with this, you're going to bury us. We can't be buried. We're the Bidens. In the show that followed, I believe this would be from last night, listen to what Tucker Carlson had to say about additional information that his office had received. Clip 6.
So on Monday of this week, we received from a source, a collection of confidential documents related to the Biden family. We believe those documents are authentic, they're real, and they're damning. At the time we received them, my executive producer, Justin Wells, and I were in Los Angeles preparing to interview Tony Bobulinski about the Biden's business dealings in China, Ukraine, and other countries. So we texted a producer in New York, and we asked him to send those documents to us in LA, and he did that. So Monday afternoon of this week, he shipped those documents overnight to California with a large national carrier, a brand name company that we've used, you've used countless times with never a single problem. But the Biden documents never arrived in Los Angeles. Tuesday morning, we received word from the shipping company that our package had been opened and the contents were missing. The documents had disappeared.
These documents pertaining to the Biden family business, they just disappeared. He wanted to ship them from New York to Los Angeles, and they disappeared en route. Someone in the shipping company. Does this make you feel pretty good about all of those blank ballots that are out there? Millions and millions of ballots. This is the United States of America. This is not some banana republic. This is not some third world nation. This is the United States of America, and you can see just how intense the hatred is coming from the radical left. What did my father say? They will do anything to return to power. The Wall Street Journal, I mentioned yesterday the story that it had running or was going to go with, but then it pulled at the last minute. I think there's a pretty big divide between the editorial page at the Journal and the rest of the newspaper. But this is the editorial board. It says, Joe Biden is asking voters to elect him on the strength of his character, honesty, and judgment, which is why Mr. Biden owes a response to new allegations about his son Hunter's business deals. Tony Bobulinski on Tuesday sat with Tucker Carlson to provide details of a 2016-17 business venture involving Hunter, Jim Biden, Joe's brother, and CEFC China Energy, a conglomerate tied to the Chinese government. Mr. Bobulinski, a Navy veteran and financier, was recruited by Hunter and Associates to serve as CEO, and the interview shed more light on hundreds of emails and documents he recently made public. It's just summarizing some of the things that we went through yesterday. Mr. Bobulinski said that in 2017, he twice met with former Vice President Joe Biden as part of a Biden family effort at wining and dining him to take on the CEO role. He pointed to documents in which Hunter and others refer to Joe's involvement in the deal, including an email from Hunter partner James Gillier that proposed the big guy get 10% of the company equity held in Hunter's name. So Hunter was the one that did the money laundering. It all funneled through him. He was the bag man, the collector, and he had to make sure that everybody in the family got their cut. And the Wall Street Journal says, look, he's running for president of the United States. He should have to answer for this. But the major media, they're doing everything that they can to protect him. They're censoring things at big tech. They're destroying the contents of overnight packages. They're threatening the life of Bobulinski. And they're applying pressure to Tucker Carlson, I'm sure to those that advertise on his show. Don't you dare go there. That's just got to be blotted out. This is from the Media Research Center regarding that Tuesday episode of Tucker Carlson. It says, according to numbers released early Wednesday night, Carlson pulled in 7.562 million viewers for the bombshell interview with direct evidence of the Biden family's rank corruption, including a phone call with Biden associate Bob Walker pleading that Bobulinski not go public. Tucker's 7.5 million total viewers led the way Tuesday for not only the Fox News Channel, but all of cable television, and came in third on the broadcast networks, trailing Game 6 of the World Series and NBC's The Voice. So you had the World Series, you had The Voice, and then you had Tucker Carlson and his interview with Bobulinski. It says that meant Carlson beat out ABC's The Bachelorette, the season premiere of NBC's This Is Us, and the special primetime episodes of CBS's Let's Make a Deal and The Price is Right. These shows are still around. Anyway, it says the interview came on the heels of Tucker Carlson's Tonight's strongest month ever, with an average of over 5.3 million total viewers in October and 670,000 in the 25 to 54 demo that even surpassed the CBS Evening News with Nora O'Donnell. So even more viewers than the broadcast network, just the free over-the-air networks. It says, finally, according to an FSN press release, this marked the highest-rated monthly viewership of any program in the history of cable news. That's the monthly viewership, which was at 5.3 million before Tuesday night. And then he pulls in a whopping 7.5 million. And you add to that all the people that viewed it online or portions of it, and the talk radio that gave it airplay, like we did on the program yesterday. And as I said earlier on, the message is going out. Even against all of this resistance, you think about some of the unique things happening in these last couple of weeks before November 3rd, as I mentioned at the top of the show, lockdown 2.0, all of these revelations, the gaffes in that second debate for Mr. Biden, and then you just look at the optics of it all. I think he had 15, 20,000 people in that first campaign in Arizona yesterday. Thousands and thousands of people. He had with him, by the way, Nigel Farage. He was with President Trump back in 2016. He was one of Donald Trump's supporters saying, look, you can beat the establishment. Well, he's there. Nigel Farage is there with President Trump yesterday in Goodyear, Arizona. And here's what he had to say, clip three.
That is what Donald Trump did. He beat the pollsters. He beat the media. He beat all the predictions. And here's the worst bit. They've never forgiven him for it. They've never, ever forgiven him. They have spent 4 years trying to delegitimize him. 4 years of the Russia hoax. 4 years of a false impeachment. Most human beings under that barrage would have given up. This is the single most resilient and bravest person I have ever met in my life.
Quite a statement. What a resilient fellow. What a brave individual to stand up to the barrage, to stand against the pressure, to stand up to these attacks. They have been nonstop. They have been vicious, in some cases violent. One more bit from Mr. Farage, clip four.
You are voting for the only current leader in the free world who has got the guts to stand up and fight for the nation state, to fight for patriotism, to fight against globalism. You'll be voting for the only leader in the Western world with the real courage to stand up to the Chinese Communist Party.
That's Nigel Farage yesterday attending the campaign in Arizona with President Trump, a leader really who is standing alone. And you see it in the States, of course, but now Europe's going into lockdown 2.0. It's going to be interesting if he gets reelected, and then you see this very clear, it's already been forming, of course, but this clear divide, perhaps even if Britain goes along or goes the way of Jeroboam. And you see this separation as it gets wider and wider between the United States and Britain and the Holy Roman Empire as it develops in the heart of Europe. Here's a statement from the president himself in the same rally, clip five.
The left-wing media and the swamp are doing everything in their power to try and stop us. And by the way, we're here and they're not. And their heads are exploding. Their heads are exploding. The media has been peddling their lies for the last 4 years, and they've had a lot to say. But in the meantime, here we are, and we're going to win the greatest election.
That's the president yesterday in Arizona. I don't have time to get to some of the emails I was hoping to go through today, but I think I have enough time just to finish with this one. It says, I just wanted to tell you that the last few TDs have been really astonishing. Every episode ends and it's like a cliffhanger. I can't wait to tune in the next morning. You and your staff have done an incredible job of exposing the Hunter Biden scandal and just how deep the corruption runs. I've been rereading Raising the Ruins, and it just amazes me how Satan uses the same old MO time and time again. Raising the Ruins is masterful in exposing what the devil did to God's church and the TD continues to expose him as he wreaks havoc on the nations of Israel. What a blessing to have truth proclaimed in the midst of all the corruption, lies, and deceit we're bombarded with every day. I really don't know what we would do without the TD. If you'd like to email the show with your feedback, you can send us messages at td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.